The Civil War. Section 1. The War Begins.
If you were there. You are a college student in Charleston in early 1861. 7 southern states have left the Union and formed their own government. All-out war seems unavoidable. Your friends have begun to volunteer for either the Union or the Confederate forces. You are torn between loyalty to your home state and to the United States. Would you join the Union or the Confederate Army?
Building background. The divisions within the United States reached a breaking point with the election of Abraham Lincoln in 1860. Several southern states angrily left the Union to form a new confederation. In border states, such as Virginia and Kentucky, people were divided. The question now was whether the United States could survive as a disunified country. Americans choose sides. Furious at Lincoln's election and fearing a federal invasion, 7 southern states had seceded. The new commander-in-chief tried desperately to save the Union. In his inaugural address, Lincoln promised not to end slavery where it existed. The federal government will not assail or attack you. You have no conflict without being yourselves the aggressors, he said, trying to calm Southerners' fears. However, Lincoln also stated his intention to preserve the Union. He believed that saving the Union would help to save democracy. If the Union and its government failed, then monarchs could say that people were unable to rule themselves. As a result, Lincoln refused to recognize secession, declaring the Union to be unbroken. In fact, after decades of painful compromises, the Union was badly broken. From the lower South, a battle cry was arising, born out of fear, rage, and excitement. Confederate officials began seizing branches of the federal mint, arsenals, and military outposts. In a last-ditch effort to avoid war between the states, Secretary of State Seward suggested a united effort of threatening war against Spain and France for interfering in Mexico and the Caribbean. In the highly charged atmosphere, it would take only a spark to unleash the heat of war. In 1861, that spark occurred at Fort Sumter, a federal outpost in Charleston, South Carolina, that was attacked by Confederate troops, beginning the Civil War. Determined to seize the fortress, which controlled the entrance to Charleston Harbor, the Confederates ringed the harbor with heavy guns. Instead of surrendering the fort, Lincoln decided to send in ships to provide badly needed supplies to defend the fort. Confederate officials demanded that the federal troops evacuate. The fort's commander, Major Robert Anderson, refused. Before sunrise on April 12, 1861, Confederate guns opened fire on Fort Sumter. A witness wrote that the first shots brought every soldier in the harbor to his feet, and every man, woman, and child in the city of Charleston from their beds. The Civil War had begun. The fort, although massive, stood little chance. Its heavy guns faced the Atlantic Ocean, not the shore. After 34 hours of cannon blasts, Fort Sumter surrendered. The last ray of hope for preserving the Union has expired at the assault upon Fort Sumter, Lincoln wrote. Reaction to Lincoln's call. The fall of Fort Sumter stunned the North. Lincoln declared the South to be in a state of rebellion and asked state governors for 75,000 militiamen to put down the rebellion. States now had to choose. Would they secede or would they stay in the Union? Democratic Senator Stephen Douglas, speaking in support of Lincoln's call for troops, declared, "There can be no neutrals in this war. Only patriots or traitors." Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and the states north of them rallied to the president's call. The crucial slave states of the Upper South, North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, and Arkansas, seceded. They provided soldiers and supplies to the South. Mary Boykin Chestnut, whose husband became a Confederate congressman, wrote in her diary, "I did not know that one could live in such days of excitement. Everybody tells you half of something and then rushes off to hear the last news." Mary Boykin Chestnut, quoted in Mary Chestnut's Civil War, edited by C. Van Woodward. Wedged between the North and the South were the key border states of Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri, slave states that did not join the Confederacy. Kentucky and Missouri controlled parts of important rivers. Maryland separated the Union capital, Washington, D.C., from the North. People in the border states were deeply divided on the war. The president's own wife, Mary Todd Lincoln, had four brothers from Kentucky who fought for the Confederacy. Lincoln sent federal troops into the border states to help keep them in the Union. He also sent soldiers into western Virginia, where Union loyalties were strong. West Virginia set up its own state government in 1863. Northern resources. Numbers tell an important story about the Civil War. Consider the North's advantages. It could draw soldiers and workers from a population of 22 million. The South had only 5.5 million people to draw from. One of the greatest advantages in the North was the region's network of roads, canals, and railroads. Some 22,000 miles of railroad track could move soldiers and supplies throughout the North. The South had only about 9,000 miles of track. In the North, the Civil War stimulated economic growth. To supply the military, the production of coal, iron, wheat, and wool increased. Also, the export of corn, wheat, beef, and pork to Europe doubled. In the South, the export of resources decreased because of the Union blockade. Finally, the Union had money. It had a more developed economy, banking system, and a currency called greenbacks. The South had to start printing its own Confederate dollars. Some states printed their own money too. This led to financial chaos. Taking advantage of the Union's strengths, General Winfield Scott developed a two-part strategy. 1. Destroy the South's economy with a naval blockade of southern ports. 2. Gain control of the Mississippi River to divide the South. Other leaders urged an attack on Richmond, Virginia, the Confederate capital. Southern resources. The Confederacy had advantages as well. With its strong military tradition, the South put many brilliant officers into battle. Southern farms provided food for its armies. The South's best advantage, however, was strategic. It needed only to defend itself until the North grew tired of fighting. The North had to invade and control the South. To accomplish this, the Union Army had to travel huge distances. For example, the distance from northern Virginia to central Georgia is about the length of Scotland and England combined. Because of distances such as this, the North had to maintain long supply lines. In addition, wilderness covered much of the South. Armies found this land difficult to cross. Also, in Virginia, many of the rivers ran from east to west. Because of this, they formed a natural defense against an army that attacked from the north to the south. As a result, northern generals were often forced to attack Confederate troops from the side rather than from the front. Furthermore, because southerners fought mostly on their home soil, they were often familiar with the area. The South hoped to wear down the North and to capture Washington, D.C. Confederate President Jefferson Davis also tried to win foreign allies through cotton diplomacy. This was the idea that Great Britain would support the Confederacy because it needed the South's raw cotton to supply its booming textile industry. cotton diplomacy did not work as the South had hoped. Britain had large supplies of cotton and had got more from India and Egypt. Preparing for war. The North and the South now rushed to war. Neither side was prepared for the tragedy to come. Volunteer armies. Volunteer militias had sparked the revolution that created the United States. Now they would battle for its future. At the start of the war, the Union Army had only 16,000 soldiers. Within months, that number had swelled to 500,000. Southern men rose up to defend their land and their ways of life. Virginian Thomas Webber came to fight against the invading foe or enemy who now pollute the sacred soil of my beloved native state. When Union soldiers asked one captured rebel why he was fighting, he replied, "I'm fighting because you're down here." Helping the troops. Civilians on both sides helped those in uniform. They raised money, provided aid for soldiers and their families, and ran emergency hospitals. Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell, the first woman to receive a license to practice medicine, organized a group that pressured President Lincoln to form the U.S. Sanitary Commission in June 1861. The sanitary, as it was called, was run by clergyman Henry Bellows. Tens of thousands of volunteers worked with the U.S. Sanitary Commission to send bandages, medicines, and food to Union Army camps and hospitals. Some 3,000 women served as nurses in the Union Army. Training the soldiers. Both the Union and Confederate armies faced shortages of clothing, food, and even rifles. Most troops lacked standard uniforms and simply wore their own clothes. Eventually, each side chose a color for their uniforms. The Union chose blue. The Confederates wore gray. The problem with volunteers was that many of them had no idea how to fight. School teachers, farmers, and laborers all had to learn the combat basics of marching, shooting, and using bayonets. In a letter to a friend, a Union soldier described life in the training camp. "We have been wading through mud knee-deep all winter. For the last 2 weeks, we have been drilled almost to death. Squad drill from 6 to 7 a.m., company drill from 9 to 11 a.m., battalion drill from 2 to 4.5 p.m., dress parade from 5 to 5.5 p.m., and non-commissioned officer school from 7 to 8 in the evening. If we don't soon become a well-drilled regiment, we ought to." David R.P. Shoemaker, 1862. With visions of glory and action, many young soldiers were eager to fight. They would not have to wait long. Discipline and drill were used to turn raw volunteers into an efficient fighting machine. During a battle, the success or failure of a regiment often depended on its discipline. How well it responded to orders. Volunteers also learned how to use rifles. Eventually, soldiers were expected to be able to load, aim, and fire their rifles 3 times in 1 minute. The quality of the weapons provided varied greatly. Most soldiers favored the Springfield and Enfield rifles for their accuracy. On the other hand, soldiers often complained about their Austrian and Belgian rifles. A soldier remarked, "I don't believe one could hit the broadside of a barn with them." The Union Army provided the infantry with 2-person tents. However, soldiers often discarded these tents in favor of more portable ones. The Confederate Army did not usually issue tents. Instead, Confederates often used tents that were captured from the Union Army. Summary and preview. As citizens chose sides in the Civil War, civilians and soldiers alike became involved in the war effort. In the next section, you will learn about some early battles in the war, both on land and at sea. But first, review the main ideas of this section. Then take some time to demonstrate what you've learned by answering the section assessment questions.